Hi, I'm William Tullett from Anglia Ruskin University in Cambridge.
And I'm Hannah McCann from the University of Melbourne in Australia.
And welcome to the Pandemic Sensory Archive, a collection of voices from sensory experts on the fate of the five senses during and after the COVID-19 pandemic.
This project has been sponsored by the British Academy, and we hope that you enjoy the interview.
Okay, so welcome back to the Pandemic Sensory Archive. Today I'm speaking to Lucy Fountain-Smith. Lucy, do you want to, we'll dive straight in, and if you want to explain who you are, what you do, and sort of what your expertise is when it comes to the senses, and particularly, I suppose, smell in a way.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Lucy. I'm a freelance writer. So I write about all kinds of things, from like home renovations through to technology, through to theatre. And my background is actually in theatre itself. I used to be an actor back in the day. My sort of expertise in smell just comes from personal experience. I became anosmic in 2018, just as a result of a bad cold gone wrong. And I was just passed from doctor to doctor, told that it will come back, it's a cold, you know, go away. And it never did come back. So through sort of my own research, my family's research, we found a charity called Fifth Sense, and I started to volunteer with them to create content for other people like me who were struggling, because we found that there was hardly anything to do with anosmia or personal experiences out, especially back in 2018. When I first told people I had anosmia, people thought I was saying insomnia and sort of directed me to like sleeping advice articles, and I was like, you've not got this right. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm coming from. Everything I've learned is sort of through my own experience and what I've picked up from other people around me.
So you'd say that kind of the primary difficulty before the pandemic in being anosmic was really that nobody really understood the condition, and that also there just wasn't enough information about it. Those are the kinds of two chief issues for you.
Yeah, definitely. I sort of liken acquiring anosmia, well, that's what I've got, acquired anosmia, it's not congenital, to the stages of grief in a way, because you go through so many different emotions, you don't understand it, you're angry, you're despondent, you get depressed. And yeah, there was nothing for me to sort of cling on to. I couldn't find any personal records, especially anyone young. I think I was 26 when it happened, something like that. And I felt sort of robbed, because someone interviewed me actually quite early on, asking me if I'd lost it later in life, would I feel more accepting of it? And I got really angry, because I was like, you know, asking me if I'd feel better later on in life, whereas I've got this whole life ahead of me, probably smells, tastes I've never, ever encountered before. So I was desperate to find something, or to then begin writing my own experience down, which is when I got involved with the charity. And we did a lot of work together to just create something for other people to find and understand, because prior to the pandemic, people just didn't understand it at all.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I suppose one of the, you know, chief difficulties with conditions like anosmia is that it's not just the condition itself, but it's all the other things that it leads to, right? So you mentioned, you know, the depression, for example. Mm. I mean, I don't know if you could talk a little bit more about, you know, generally how it just transformed your daily life. You know, what was the kind of general impact sort of day to day that anosmia had on you?
Yeah, so I mean, I was working in an office back then, which seems like a foreign idea right now, but so I was surrounded by people, and my desk is actually right next to the little kitchen we had in the office. So there'd regularly be, you know, horrible smells from like the sink, the bin, or people that'd come in, and honestly, they'd cook like fish in the microwave. It was awful. So a lot of people in the office who hadn't lost their sense of smell would just comment on things like that, saying, oh, it's awful, or, you know, come and rub my shoulder and be like, oh, but at least you can't smell that. And it'd be the absolute not what I wanted to hear at all. I didn't want that. I didn't want to know what I was missing or how good it is that I can't smell that. The point is, I can't smell the good smells either. And that's what I really struggled with. There still are anosmia awareness days. They fall in February of each year. And the first one of it, I started something called just peg your nose, hashtag peg your nose, to get people to peg their nose or hold their nose while they were doing sort of mundane things like drinking some coffee, hugging someone, trying to smell their child or something like that, just so they could get some kind of tangible understanding of what it was like. Because there are so many great things I can't smell, and bins and stuff like that. But I've also lost all those comforting things, like smelling something of a loved one or someone who's no longer with me. So in the very beginning, that is what I was struggling with hugely. It took quite a while to come to terms with it.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think as a culture, we tend to have this view of smell that it's either really pleasant and fragrant, or it stinks and it's horrible.
Yeah.
and kind of actually what you're talking about is a kind of a whole world of much subtler sense that we just kind of take for granted, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I started to get parosmia as things developed, which is when things, but when things smell chemical or like feces, things like that. So even things that should be nice, like opening or cutting open an orange, would just be putrid. It would be awful. I'd have to, because I was sat next to the kitchen all the time in the office, I had to keep leaving the room because, nice smells, strawberries, things like that. Coffee was awful. And that was crushing because I love coffee. But it's a common thing that goes with parosmia. For me, it just turned absolutely terrible.
I guess with things like that, with parosmia as well, is that, in some ways it makes us realise just how many smells are around us every day, because, you start to take notice of those smells that suddenly have become sort of disfigured and are reminded a bit of people with kind of multiple chemical sensitivities as well, right, where they kind of are much more aware of the smells that are around us than you would ordinarily be. And that's both a curse, and it's also a wonderful thing sometimes, but it's also can be a horrible curse as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I used to work in Birmingham, so I'd be commuting on the train every day. So there are instances where it was, it was great not to smell. But then if you caught something, if someone was eating something in the train carriage, there was no way for me to sort of escape it. So that became just really tiresome and kind of a bother. Like, I don't want to have to keep leaving somewhere because something smells so bad. And then people didn't understand that I'm saying I can't smell, but yeah, I can smell. It was just a huge minefield.
Yeah, but it becomes an issue, doesn't it, in terms of kind of just being in public space and people's ability to be understanding and kind to others around them. This is something that really we're still trying to negotiate, the idea that we should in some way regulate the smells around us on a day-to-day basis. There are things like fragrance laws in the US, right? But we don't have anything like that here. So maybe that's a kind of challenge that we'll get around to in the UK at some point. But so would you say that the kind of your experience of working in the office and then also commuting was one of the things that led you to going freelance?
I think that the distance, just the geographical distance from Birmingham to where I live, it was like a 1 hour train journey. It's kind of stupid looking back at it now. I don't know why I put up with it for so long. But it was just eating so much of my time away. And I've always kind of had this longing to go freelance and sort of do it on my own. But I think just the pandemic happening and we literally couldn't leave our homes, I was just like, right, this is the time now.
Yeah, absolutely. It provides a good opportunity to kind of reassess that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure.
So in terms of then, the pandemic strikes, and obviously one of the things that has been associated with COVID-19 is the loss of taste and smell. And so when this first kind of started to come on the news, the idea that the smell and taste loss was kind of a key symptom, what was your reaction to that?
I was just shocked to see a word that nobody understood, that had so few Google hits on it, to suddenly be like on the front page of newspapers or websites, or even my friends, people I knew, coming to me saying like, is this what you've got, because it's going around now. It was crazy. It was sort of out of body, but also oddly comforting, and that's kind of a hard thing to sort of express, but it was comforting in a way to kind of be like, oh, finally, like, people are going to understand this, or there are going to be more people that I can talk to or that I can help, or that we can share the experience together. Because as I've said already, that's really what I struggled with, just people purely understanding what it was like to have it. But it was obviously an awful awful side effect of, you know, this thing that's going around. But it did prompt me to write a lot more and to kind of reach out to various places. I wrote for the Metro quite early on in the pandemic in 2020, a piece saying that my anosmia is permanent and mine won't go away with pandemic, like most people. So that was sort of an odd thing, because as the pandemic went on, these people that I was connecting with and eventually got over it, and their smells and tastes came back, but I was still sort of left flatlining without it. And I know much worse things can happen than losing your sense of smell and taste. A lot of people have said to me, at least it's not your other senses, which is completely true. But it still is, it's a disability. It's incredibly isolating in a completely different way. So again, that was sort of another wave of emotion to go through, to try and come to terms with these people getting over the thing that you've got forever. It was quite a weird time.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Because on the one hand, obviously, I guess it provided a great moment for people like yourself, but also charities like Absent and Fifth Sense that are raising awareness about anosmia and smell loss. On the other hand, you know, one wonders if there was a general public view that, you know, oh, it's always temporary, and then that kind of left out those people or ignored those people, like you said, like yourself, who, you know, their sense of smell will never come back. And so on the one hand, it's raising awareness, but maybe it's raising awareness in the wrong way. And I can completely get that idea that people, you know, you feel like people kind of visited you in the world of an anosmic and then just kind of left again.
Yeah,
it must have been a very difficult thing to deal with. I mean, so more generally, do you think, you know, did your smell loss change the way, do you think it altered the way that you experienced the pandemic more generally? In terms of kind of your experience of the olfactory world of the pandemic? Or do you think that it's kind of not actually really had an effect? Do you think that your anosmia has made you experience the pandemic differently, I guess, is what I'm saying?
That's a really good question. I think, like, from a practical point of view, I was incredibly worried in the first wave because I wasn't aware if my smell and taste had changed ever. So I'd sort of lost that symptom. So, you know, when people were asking, like, oh, if you've got any, you know, cough, high temperature, loss of smell and taste, and I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do? Because I've not got that. So that it was a bit disconcerting and made me feel quite vulnerable. And also having an olfactory disorder, I wondered if anything would affect me more because of that. It was all quite confusing and a lot of unanswered questions. But I don't really think it's affected me sort of day to day. I guess, you know, that being indoors and in lockdown and stuff, you're kind of controlling your own environment. So I was definitely escaping the horrible smells of the office. They were gone. So I could kind of keep a handle on how my home was. But I think further to that, in a way, it was sort of comforting because I was no longer having to put myself through going out and meeting friends in pubs, clubs, bars, restaurants, and having them enjoy food and drink next to me, and, you know, commenting on the tastes and the smells, because I really struggled with that. And I think I do still struggle with that, but because I've been out of that sort of circulation for so long, I'm no longer that aware of it until I start going out again, I think. But it was quite nice in a way to sort of have a dinner without someone commenting on how good this is, taste this, try this, or like, oh, I've got a new perfume today, smell my arm. It's like so many of my friends did, not maliciously, they just forget. So it was nice in a way to sort of be cocooned away from all of that while it was all happening.
Yeah, that's really interesting. There are kind of positives to be found in that experience, even if there's the issue regarding symptoms, which I think is a really interesting point. I mean, I think that's an uncertainty that lots of people could relate to, in that the kind of the key symptoms sort of changed as the pandemic went on, and also I guess the key dangers changed as the pandemic went on, because at first we had this focus on touch, we had a focus on hands and this kind of hygiene theatre around sanitising. And yet now we kind of recognise that it's airborne, which I think has maybe increased people's kind of wariness about smell. But obviously, you know, that's very different if your first kind of worry is, well, how the hell do I know if I've got it? Because I haven't got a taste or smell to lose.
No. I went for my first vaccine the other day, and the guy at the door was like, have you got a temperature? Have you got a change in your taste and smell and taste? And I was like, I don't actually know how to answer this. If I answer yes, he's going to jump like 20 feet away from me. So I was just like, no, because I mean, it hasn't changed since 2018. So I guess no, nothing has changed.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you think then more generally that, you know, the pandemic has changed our relationship with smell at all? Or do you think it has changed our relationship with anosmia in a way that, you know, might produce further change down the line? Or do you think that kind of this is a blip where, you know, we've had this spotlight on smell disorders, but people will just kind of go back to kind of largely ignoring them?
I think it might be a mix of both. I'd love to think that this spotlight will stay on anosmia, and I think certainly people will at least understand what it is when they say smell and taste disorders now, or the word anosmia itself, which is something new, to be honest. But I mean, with people suffering from long COVID, they're still having their smell and taste affected. So I think it might stick around a bit longer, this understanding. And if people have gone through it as well, usually you gain some sort of empathy for other people who are also going through it, or can relate your life experience to them. So I'd hope that would stick around. But I think probably the main beam of the spotlight is probably faded by now. But during 2020 especially, I think there was a lot of focus, and I hope, well, at least there's more on the internet about it now, and things like this as well will kind of show what was happening and what people did think at that time.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of there's more information in circulation, which brings us back to that first point you made about, you know, one of the things you struggled with initially when you were diagnosed is, well, I can't, or when you were experiencing osmosis, you weren't really sure where to find the information, and that's much clearer for now for people, which is great. I suppose it's interesting that point about long COVID, isn't it? Because, you know, there have been campaigns, haven't there, about raising awareness of the difficulties that those with anosmia face in terms of things like detecting gas leaks. And if we've got a population in which, you know, anosmia either long term or short term is more prevalent, then maybe there will be more recognition of, you know, we have to deal with some of those issues and some of the accessibility things that anosmia produces, some of the problems that it produces.
Yeah, definitely. And the gas thing has just triggered a memory. When I was kind of early diagnosed, the gas was left on in the kitchen while I was cleaning it, and I couldn't hear it, couldn't smell it either. So I was in there cleaning for quite a while before someone came in and sort of smelt the room and was like, oh my God, and kind of took me out of it. And since then, wherever I go, you can get gas alarms that detect gas just like smoke or carbon monoxide. So I just have them sort of placed wherever gas is, just to be sure, just to act as like a nose for me, because like I don't always want to have to rely on like my partner to tell me on things like that. But it's hard with like spoiled food or like cooking. You have no idea when a recipe says like season to taste, I'm just like what? I don't know what that means to me. So it kind of knocks your confidence. And yeah, it's just hard to know. You feel like you have a bit less sort of judgment on things because you don't know how you smell or how things taste. Because for me, I've lost my basic taste as well. I'm not quite sure why. Usually with anosmia, it's just your nose that's been affected. You still have your basic taste of like sweet, salty, that kind of thing. But those seem to have gone with mine also. So it's like a completely blank canvas. Which is quite bizarre, quite isolating, but honestly, that time is the only thing that has helped me come to terms with it and just accept that this is how it is now. And if something improves, great, but if it doesn't, this is fine.
I mean, and one of the other people we're going to be interviewing for the for the archive is a couple of people who've been working on kind of cookbooks for people suffering from anosmia, you know, which I guess means kind of more of a focus on other elements of food like texture, right?
Would that be definitely true to say? Yeah. Loads of people ask me like, how do you eat? I don't want to eat anymore. Like nothing, because you don't salivate really. You don't smell something, and your mouth doesn't fill with liquid. So it makes eating quite hard, like physically. But yeah, textures help, colors help, presentation, all the things you don't really think about when you're plating up a dinner at like 7 o'clock at night. If you just sort of try to make things look nice visually, at least you can appreciate that. And sort of try and think about what it might have tasted like. It's hard because I think I've forgotten mostly what things did smell like or taste like. But just trying to sort of recall some kind of emotion from when we used to eat things as a child, or you know, favorite dishes or things like that. Those are kind of the coping mechanisms I have used.
Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, I mean, to end on a sort of positive note, I very much hope that the pandemic and the kind of proliferation of information about anosmia and smell and taste disorders really does mean that we go into a future where they're sort of taken better account of and better understood and better empathized with, really. I'm really struck by, you know, there was a poll a couple of years ago where people kind of said they'd rather lose access to social media, they'd rather lose their sense of smell than lose access to social media. And you know, that probably all sounds very glib and sort of unthinking now, in the context of the pandemic. So hopefully attitudes will change.
Definitely, yeah, I hope so.
But thank you so much for your time, Lucy. It's been a real pleasure chatting, and thank you for all that you've done in raising awareness about anosmia and smell disorders.
Thank you. That's great. Thank you for getting in touch.